from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org.
At the legislature today, for the first time in more than 80 years, Republicans have taken the helm of both chambers. So what does that mean for the Democratic governor's legislative agenda? Governor Earl Ray Tomlin joins us to discuss his priorities and his plan to balance a tight state budget. The first piece of legislation both the House and Senate are working on is one that deals with how electricity is generated by West Virginia utilities and is already sparking discussion from both sides of the aisle. And we look back at the fireworks in the House on their first day in session on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara, and welcome to another season of The Legislature Today. Our cameras and reporters are poised in the committee rooms and on the floors of the state Senate and House of Delegates to bring you all of the action from the first regular session of the 82nd West Virginia Legislature. We begin tonight with a review of the governor's State of the State address, which opened this session last Wednesday. Governor Tomlin touted the state's accomplishments over the past year and previewed the issues he'll ask lawmakers to take on this session. Joining us now to detail his proposed budget and legislative agenda, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin. Governor, thank you for being with us.
Very pleased to be here, Ashton.
So I'd like to start by saying, you know, I went through and counted, and during the State of the State address, it was about 16 times that you said together. Was it important for you to send a message of unity now that the chambers are led by the opposite party?
Well, not only now, but in the past. We did a lot of the things that I talked about in my State of the State, workers' comp reform, medical malpractice reform, you know, some education reforms, you know, with Democrats and Republicans working together. And I would like to continue that same working relationship. Throughout my political career, I've been able to work with across the aisle or with both parties, and I certainly want that to continue with the new leadership that's in the House and Senate now.
So let's start with the budget. Your Department of Revenue is saying a $200 million deficit that you're making up in your budget. Where does that money come from? How do we make up that gap? Well,
it comes from various places in the budget. Obviously, there's areas where we're actually reducing the budget. This is the first time in most people's memory where we got a budget that's lower in total dollars than it was a year ago. Yeah, we've been able to cut over the last 2 years of 15%, 7.5% cut, and another 7.5% cut out. So, yeah, there's changes within the budget itself. Obviously, we've talked about taking some money again this year out of the rainy day fund. I'm pleased to announce this evening that we had talked about earlier about $85 million, and I think it's going to be substantially lower than that, and we should have an announcement on that coming tomorrow.
Okay. But you also, your department secretary mentioned $72 million in targeted cuts.
Right.
Is it true that $60 million of that was volunteered by your DHHR secretary? She found that money?
A lot of that was. There's, especially since the changes in the Medicaid coverage in West Virginia, there's a lot of services now that the state was paying for, that for people are now receiving Medicaid, to take care of their illnesses or their preventative health. So, that's a good portion of the money that we were able to find right there, because so many people have signed up for Medicaid.
So you mentioned you're going to have an announcement on your rainy day funds, but I'm going to ask anyways. There's some talk at the State House that obviously Republican leaders, they don't want to use any money from the rainy day fund is what they've said. Mm-hmm. There's been some talk that they'll look to higher education to make up that funding. Is that a good choice?
Well, I'm not sure. Higher ed has taken some hits in the past, and obviously we're encouraging people to go on to college and obviously encouraging having reasonable tuition rates for our students when they do go to college. But there's nobody that hates to get into the rainy day fund more than I did. I was the one that helped start the thing several years ago. And you know, fortunately, we do have the fourth best rainy day fund in the entire country. So it's not one of those things that I'm excited about. But you know, when we talked to the bond rating agencies, you know, we were concerned about it last year. That was the first time we got into it to balance a budget. But they said that's the reason you created it. You know, things are tough right now. So it's not a major concern to them. Obviously, we don't want to continue to do it and not get into it any deeper than we have to. But that's the reason that fund was created. So we do not have to do more damage to a lot of programs that otherwise would have to be cut in the state of West Virginia.
So even if it's significantly less than what you all have said this year, how do you convince Republicans that we may need to dip into that fund? They just don't want to.
Well, like I said, nobody wants to get into it. I don't want to get into it, but you know, when you got to have a balanced budget in this state, you know, there's decisions you got to make. Do you just absolutely go in and cripple some of the programs that a lot of our people depend on? Or do you try to come up with ways that is going to balance the budget? Because we do a six-year forecast every year. We knew that these two or three years were going to be tough years. 5 years ago, we knew this was coming. But it's one of those things. We also know that in a couple of years from now, we're going to go back to having surpluses again. So once that starts, then the rainy day fund will build itself back up.
Okay. I'd like to talk education a little bit. I was honestly surprised that in your speech you only mentioned one piece of legislation. We talked about education a lot, but only one real bill, and that was a bill making it easier for professionals to transition into the teaching world. Mm-hmm. And that's something that governors have tried and failed in the past. So how do you convince the unions that this is a good idea?
Well, I think that we've had discussion with the teachers' unions, and there are programs out there now, but they're simply, you know, too cumbersome for people to get through. We got a lot of people in this state. I mean, we've almost lost a whole generation of chemists and engineers here in the Kanawha Valley, you know, once the chemical industry downsized. But it's people, you know, that spent their life in chemistry and engineering that could very well have taken what they've learned, what they've practiced throughout their working career, and be able to go over and get some education credit to be able to go in those high need areas to be able to give those STEM kind of classes that we need so desperately in the state of West Virginia. So, yeah, I think there's room for us to compromise and to find something that's workable, both for the state of West Virginia, our Department of Education, as well as the labor unions.
You know, you mentioned those high need areas. I spoke with the superintendent of McDowell County Schools, I think in August, a few weeks before school started, and he said, we have 15 open positions right now. Is Teach for America another good option for the state in those high need areas?
Well, I'm not sure. I think that, you know, there are other ways of looking. In the past, I've made proposals on things like student loan forgiveness. You know, if you will go to one of those high need areas in the state. There are several things that we can do, and obviously, you know, the alternative certification is one that we're trying to work on right now to assure that those people who want to go into the classroom, who have the educational background in their fields, will be able to use them in a lot of places in West Virginia.
When it comes to infrastructure, we still didn't have a mention this year of recommendations from your Blue Ribbon Commission on Highways. In case our audience doesn't know, that was a group you put together in 2012 to study the state highway system and come up with new ways to fund it. Are we ever going to see those recommendations?
Well, you know, I was hoping the recommendations would be out before the session started. You know, once again, the funding for our highways is kind of a fluid thing, especially with what's going on in D.C. You know, our interstates, roads and bridges are getting some age on. We need help fixing those. There's other roads that we need to build in West Virginia. And it's very hard for a state the size of West Virginia with as many miles of state highways that we got to construct or repair those roads without the help from the federal government. Obviously, with a gridlock we've had in D.C. over the last several years, you know, the Federal Highway Trust Fund is basically bankrupt. And you know, there's hope now with you know, the same party running Congress that they can reestablish that program and start getting some money back to the states. It's not only a West Virginia problem, it's a national problem that all governors are really concerned about, because states cannot alone maintain the roads and do the kind of repairs and upgrades that we need on our own, by ourselves.
In this speech, you got out a little bit early. The tolls on the state turnpike expire in 2019.
That's correct.
And you got out early saying you think we should keep them.
Well, what I said is let's not take them off too quick. That's about $85 million a year that's coming in to our highway system that's coming off there. And nearly all that money, 80-some percent of that money, is coming from out-of-state travelers or commercial vehicles. Obviously, those residents of West Virginia can get an easy pass, get discounted passes for the turnpike, and take the amount they spend off on their state taxes. So, I don't think it would be responsible right now to take the tolls off the turnpike before the bonds are paid off.
Let's talk a little bit about energy. We'll see a story here shortly about a bill that's moving quickly through both chambers and is expected to be up for a vote this week. That bill repeals a law that requires electric utilities to use renewable and alternative energy sources to create 25% of their electricity by 2020. You were Senate President when that bill passed in 2009. Mm-hmm. Should it be repealed?
I think that parts of it could be repealed. I think what then-Governor Manchin was trying to do was to show the EPA that we are diversifying our energy base to use renewable energies, and I think most of our power plants have already attained that bill outlined. But I don't see it as a problem to repeal that portion of it. However, there was another part that had tax credits in there that those people who did invest in the renewables that we would receive a tax credit. And I think it's only fair that that portion of the bill be kept because those people in good faith did invest their money.
Well, Governor, thank you very much for your time this evening. We appreciate having you.
Good to be here.
Coming up, the legislature is moving quickly to repeal that alternative and renewable energy portfolio standard, commonly referred to as cap and trade. But first, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today.
Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 252, to make the West Virginia schools for the deaf and blind eligible to participate in any and all funding administered or distributed by the West Virginia School Building Authority. Senate Bill 253, to revise, rearrange, consolidate, and recodify the laws of the state of West Virginia relating to child welfare and juvenile disposition. This bill was recommended for introduction and passage by the West Virginia Judiciary's Court Improvement Board. It's the product of a bipartisan effort of all the stakeholders to streamline the child welfare laws in the state. Senate Bill 254, the governor's bill to clarify the West Virginia Fire, EMS, and Law Enforcement Officers Survivor Benefit Act with respect to the process to receive the benefit and the eligibility for the survivor benefit. This bill also transfers oversight of the certification process from the governor's office to the Secretary of the Department of Military Affairs and Public Safety. And Senate Bill 255, the governor's bill to eliminate 20 boards, councils, task forces, commissions, and committees that are unnecessary, inactive, or redundant. On second reading, the amendment stage in the Senate tomorrow, Senate Bill 1, repealing certain alternative and renewable energy portfolio standards. And Senate Bill 3, to codify existing common law in West Virginia as it relates to the duty of care owners of property owe trespassers.
From the office of the executive to the lawmakers themselves, we first check in with a bill that's caused a bit of an uproar in both the House and the Senate. The bill would repeal a 2009 law requiring utilities use a certain amount of renewable and alternative fuels. But that bill is changing shape as it makes its way through both chambers. The Alternative and Renewable Energy Act was approved by lawmakers 5 years ago under the guise of Governor Joe Manchin. Backed by the coal industry, the law requires electric utilities in the state to produce 25% of their energy using alternative and renewable resources like solar or wind by 2025. But industry representatives now say the law forces utilities to use certain types of fuel and could hurt coal production. That's why lawmakers are working to repeal it, leaving the free market to dictate the energy sources utilities choose. The Senate Energy Committee took up Senate Bill 1, which would repeal the requirements for a second time today. Last week, Senator Herb Snyder of Jefferson County moved to amend the bill, allowing for a practice called net metering to remain.
That provision permits anyone that generates their own energy at a customer level, such as having solar panels or some other means, to put energy into the grid to it compels the utilities to provide a discount or a rebate in that event.
Snyder's amendment was approved by the committee. Senator Craig Blair, also from the Eastern Panhandle, moved to amend the bill as well. Right now, consumers creating more energy than they can use are given a credit by their electric utility for the excess. But Blair says those individuals or businesses sometimes have more credits than they can use. His amendment would allow individual energy producers to donate their energy credits to nonprofits set up by utilities. Those nonprofits help low-income families pay their utility bills.
And as more and more people come online with their own alternative energies in their homes, it gives an opportunity to help those that are in need.
The committee approved his amendment as well and moved the bill to the full Senate with recommendation it pass. The House Judiciary Committee revisited its version of the same bill, House Bill 2001. Committee members heard from Professor James Van Nostrand from West Virginia University. Van Nostrand says the law currently in place puts West Virginia on a course to comply with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's proposed regulations on carbon emissions.
I think that there was good in this bill. I think there's still good in this bill for the future, as has been testified to by Professor Van Nostrand. This could very well serve as an important building block in our compliance with EPA standards that we know are coming in West Virginia. Secondly, what we know from our discussions of this bill is that it has done no harm.
No harm, Manchin says, because utility representatives testified before the committee last week that they have already met the 2015 standards and will meet the 2020 and 2025 requirements without any further cost to them or their customers. The entire committee, including Manchin, approved the bill to repeal the Energy Portfolio Act. Manchin says despite his concerns over the repeal, his constituents are for it, and he voted on their behalf. On the Senate floor, Senate Minority Leader Jeff Kessler picked up on Manchin's point. Kessler called on new Senate President Bill Cole to ask for an economic impact study on the bill, a bill he says he supports but still questions.
I've heard folks from the industry get up at the portion of the meetings. I'm not on that committee, but I've heard portions of it over our network to say that it is not a cap and trade bill. Well, what is it? I don't know. It's an energy portfolio bill. And then people say, well, what's it do? Doesn't do nothing. The current bill doesn't do nothing. I'll say, why? Because we already meet all the standards when we passed it. So the bill doesn't do anything. What's it do going forward? Well, it's going to set new standards of what we got to do in 2020 and 2025. And you ask the industry, they says, well, we're already there too. So it doesn't do nothing. But this would give us an opportunity, Mr. President, to show the public, to show the people of this state that we're creating more jobs if it does so. We're creating lowering energy utility costs for the people we represent. But let's see if it happens, Mr. President, because I think we need to work and create sound public policy based upon measurable improvements.
House Minority Leader Tim Miley also asked Speaker Tim Armstead for a similar economic impact study on the bill. The Senate has fast-tracked the bill and will vote on the Alternative and Renewable Energy Act's repeal Wednesday. The bill will be on first reading in the House tomorrow.
Petition.
January 14th marked the first day of the 82nd legislative session. For the first time in 80 years, Republicans hold the majority in the House. But on that first day, the Democrats, now in the minority, came out swinging. Liz McCormick reports.
This transition has been said to be historic in so many ways. It will only truly be historic to West Virginians when it touches their lives.
In his acceptance speech, newly elected House Speaker Tim Armstead spoke of the challenges facing the state and reached out to the now minority Democrats to work together to find solutions. After all the pomp and circumstance of the swearing-in ceremonies, it was on to routine business. Each session, the House needs to agree on its own rules. So up for a vote was House Resolution Number 1. It's a simple procedure that turned into partisan bickering. For years, House Republicans have wanted each proposed piece of legislation to contain an economic impact statement, to ascertain whether a law would be good or bad for the state's economy. But the Democratic majority would have none of it and never adopted the GOP's proposal. Now the Republicans can write the rules and leadership decided to insert language requiring each bill to carry an economic impact statement. That set the Democrats off. Delegate Larry Williams from Preston County started it off when he proposed an amendment to require the economic impact statement to include
those years,
how the law would affect
the
state's senior citizen population.
How it's really a simple amendment. It just adds senior citizens as a special category into the impact study.
Delegate Darrell Cowles, the majority leader, disagreed, saying it would only make things more complicated.
To add segments of the population, senior issues or whatever, would not so much help. There's an important thing to remember is the jobs impact or economic impact of the new Section 95C in the House Rule 1 affects all segments of the population. Seniors, the economy, jobs, and struggles of our economy over the last year that seniors face are faced by all segments of the economy.
The amendment was rejected on party lines. Then other Democrats proposed amendments to the rule. They called for special impact statements for children, families, and veterans. All were rejected. Delegate Randy Smith of Preston County caught on to the Democrats' tactics.
And I hope we don't go down this track this year, starting this year off. Go down of every time we want to pass something, we try to drag the senior citizens, veterans, and the children in it to get a roll call vote so we can get a postcard that says Delegate Smith hates senior citizens, or Delegate so-and-so hates puppy dogs, or so-and-so. It just goes on and on.
Under the debate went on for close to 2 hours. One Republican delegate called the minority's tactics political theater. Minority Leader Tim Miley stood to explain why his caucus was making so much noise about the rules of the House.
First of all, let me say that I make no apologies for myself nor any of my colleagues for questioning any rule that we are about to put in place for the body of the House and for trying to amend any rule based upon issues they deem important to them. The new members won't know this, but last year, on this very first day, we too tried and successfully amended the rule that was simply and purely administrative on how the calendars were handled. And there was loud objection to that by many in this body on the first day. So I reject any insinuation that somehow this is political theater or in any way doing anything other than representing the people who sent us here and exercising our beliefs based upon our own life experiences.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
Now here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today.
Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 2092, to require voters to provide a photo identification when voting and provides a procedure for voters without photo ID. The bill also provides for complimentary photo identification cards to be issued to any voter who requests one. House Bill 2093, to create the Valued Employee Retention Program, in which a participating employer reduces the number of hours worked by its employees in lieu of laying off employees. House Bill 2094, to require an Environment Awareness Program to educate students about the benefits of recycling. House Bill 2096, to grant the Insurance Commissioner the power to regulate and penalize self-insured employers. The bill also permits non-compliant employers to be compliant without penalty within 90 days after receiving notice of non-compliance and provides for monetary penalties. And House Bill 2097, to create the Hatfield-McCoy Regional Recreation Authority Fund. On first reading in the House tomorrow, House Bill 2001, repealing portions of the Alternative and Renewable Energy Portfolio Act.
This has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, our guests will be Senate President Bill Cole of Mercer County. On Wednesday, we'll talk with the Speaker of the House, Tim Armstead. And on Thursday, we'll meet the new State Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Michael Martirano, along with Gail Manchin, the President of the State Board of Education. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at wvhtf.org.